Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
Been a few weeks, and there was weather happens. So we're back now with episode 217 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam Pinave. With me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Howdy. I'm saying howdy in solidarity with our Texas brethren and sistren.
Jesus, that thing is a mess. I will say, really is, yes. If you remember the last time we recorded, I managed to fool you by accident by not having like a new intro.
Yes,
this week you fooled me.
How?
I was waiting for you to make a vertical joke.
Oh my god! Why didn't I make a I'm such a fool.
Jesus.
I didn't so much fool you. I just dropped the ball.
That's fine. Well, like I did last week, which is the point. no. Can we just discuss that? Because again, it is the funniest fucking thing that Snyder is the 4-hour Justice League thing is going to be in IMAX. Frame, which of course is essentially full screen.
Right. Yeah. I think it's 1.43 is the IMAX ratio, and he's filming it in 1.33, which is the classic square Academy ratio.
Right.
Yeah.
And full screen. Because there were some shots that he had in IMAX, like a lot of films have done, and if you go and see them in IMAX, then the ratio changes suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always thought was jarring. And not worth the feature, essentially.
It never bothered me that much. Christopher Nolan is kind of best known for this. And I find usually that when he did it, it seemed like he managed to work it in carefully enough so that it wasn't like suddenly switch and then back. And whatnot.
Right.
So,
like there'd be enough of a cut between the two that would ease you in.
Right.
But again, it's kind of a gimmick, let's be honest. But Snyder loved the IMAX format, and his reasoning, though, is amazing.
Well, see, the thing is that superheroes are, they're mostly vertical.
Except when Superman is flying, apparently.
Yeah, from left to right, or right to left.
Then as if, human beings in general, when they stand up, are not vertical. I don't even know what he means.
I'm kind of confused. And the weird thing is that, and here's the thing with Snyder, a lot of his compositions actually involve people looming or making other people submit. So it's got Batman with his boot on Superman's neck, or in Watchmen, Rorschach basically putting a submission hold on Moloch
right.
for no fucking reason at all, and so on and so forth. So what he likes is vertical people over horizontal people, like L's, like the fascist L, is what I'm
sure.
going to call it.
Sure, but here's the other thing that kills me, is you know that his DP was shooting that for widescreen. He was composing the shots for widescreen.
That's not what seems to think.
Right, well that's, okay, look, I'm going to be honest with you. If George Miller said, you know what, I'm releasing this in full screen, because that's the way I envisioned it, I would fucking trust him.
Me too.
Because there's a man who can compose a fucking shot, right?
Yeah, and actually, and it's funny you mentioned Miller, because the Mad Max shots are often composed with the focus of action.
Right, and every single shot in that movie, in Fury Road.
Yeah, so you could theoretically, cut it that way.
You could.
It would work.
But also, he understands that widescreen is there for a reason.
yeah.
Anyway, so this movie, I swear to God, I mentioned this to a friend that, I'm going to have to watch this Justice League thing. And, I mentioned it to Ted, and he was like, why? And I just explained that you and me are in a death spiral for shitty fucking media. And then I had to explain Kitty Mamas. So,
Right.
oh, fuck, both of us, we are so stupid.
I know. It's, and it gets worse, like with this, because it's funny when I was watching the trailer, and I thought, and I watched it, and I said, well, I better watch it again, just to make sure. And then I watched it again, and but this time I was like, I think I'm watching like a pirated version on YouTube, because this is square ratio. This isn't widescreen. And then I found another one, and it was square ratio again. And I thought, oh,
I mean,
shit.
Look, a lot of people right now have been cutting trailers for, like, full screen for watching on a phone or watching on, like, Twitter or, you know, TikTok or whatever. And again, like, that's a perfectly fine idea, right? Cut the trailer to work in the format that it'll be watched in. But fucking cut the movie. Oh, Jesus. Anyway.
Anyway,
Speaking of things. Yeah.
Right. But I will say one more thing about it.
Yes.
When I sat down to watch the trailer, I thought, oh boy, this is going to be bad and fun. And it will give me the necessary fuel to make it to the movie itself. But it was not good. Like, it just, I watched and I'm like, oh, right, this movie sucks. And I'd sort of forgotten that it kind of, the theatrical cut was kind of bad. And this is going to be even worse. But it just reminded me, and I was like, ah, crap.
And again, like, I really do hope people who enjoy his stuff enjoy the hell out of this film. What drives me nuts are the angry, obnoxious, loud Snyder Cut people, which, to be completely honest, there are honestly less of them. They're just really loud, right?
That's exactly it, yeah.
But they are already campaigning for a sequel.
Oh, my God.
So we're not done with this. We will never be done with this.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how bad a job he does, they'll just double down.
Because they can't. They would have to admit they're wrong.
Right. They've tied up their entire
identity. Right. Can you imagine spending 4 years of your life campaigning for this thing to be like, well, that fucking sucked. Like, they can't do it. If they were the type of people who could do it, they'd be like, oh, well, and have left this more than 4 years ago. So.
Right. Exactly. Sorry, that's...
But speaking of things that did work.
Okay.
How about that WandaVision?
How about, we actually have two episodes of WandaVision.
I know.
We have not discussed. So, and it's sort of, we've got basically the Act 2 climax and the beginning of the end. Like the beginning of Act 3, basically. Episode 6 and 7. Yeah, those are good.
Yes. I thought it was interesting that 7 has a post-credit scene or mid-credit scene.
I wondered about, like, it's funny because I just sort of usually I peace out before the credits are over, but this time around I didn't.
Right.
And I just thought, oh, I'll just keep watching. And lo and behold. I think it's actually keeping up with like the decades hopping.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, this is when Marvel started, so they were like, hey, let's do the thing. No, it didn't. Like, surprised me in a weird way because of streaming, and I figured this out, that when the credits start, if there's a post-credit scene, it doesn't just instantly go to, hey, have you watched this? Or, hey, watch the next episode.
Oh, that must be why I kept watching.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that, actually, with a show I watched that we haven't ever talked about, and I don't think you've watched, because it does the same thing. Some episodes later on have, like, mid-credit scenes, and you can tell... Because it doesn't just instantly go to watch the next episode, which I think is a nice touch that, like, they teach you, like, hold on, it's okay, you'll get there. But, yeah, so WandaVision is fantastic. We have Monica getting her powers.
That's
in
nice.
A delightful way.
A nice origin story for Photon. Okay. Are they going to call her Photon? No.
Yeah, right. No, I think they have to. It's her mother's call sign.
That's right.
Remember, from the first movie, they can't use they can't use Captain Marvel. And, well, no, she's had, I think, three.
Yeah. And I know that
It's
Captain
that Photon
Marvel
and Spectrum, which right. also managed to... It's the name of a different character.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah, no, Spectrum, the Squadron Supreme, which was an Avengers analog in DC from another Earth, you know, Avengers, rather, a Justice League analog for the Marvel Universe that show up in the Avengers, like, in the 70s, and have kept being a thing, and they're from an alternate Earth and all this, blah, blah, blah,
Wow.
But, And there are some really cool stories with them. There's a Mark Gruenwald miniseries, which is infamous, for the Squadron Supreme, and highly recommended, actually, even now.
Oh, cool.
But I think that eventually Marvel might want to use them so they wouldn't use Spectrum.
Right, so maybe Photon... It will be...
Photon is the only one that's kind of clear in hers.
Gotcha.
And I think that's why they did the tie-in to her mother's call sign type of thing.
Right. No, I figured as much, and she can take on the name to honor her mother. Right.
That's, right.
It all works.
It all works.
Although Spectrum would be appropriate because sort of you when you see her going through the hex barrier,
right.
All these various like iterations of herself seem to like not only from being inside the hex but also throughout her life seem to sort of split and reassemble, which I
yeah. And I like that, like, yeah. When she hears Carol's voice is the final push.
Yes. Yes. That was quite something. Here's something funny about, speaking of what we mentioned, fans with the Zack Snyder cut, something I was expecting from fan reaction, but didn't really notice. Because when I was watching, and I couldn't sleep on Thursday night. I was suffering from insomnia. So around 2 in the morning, I got up and I... got on the computer and I watched it. And like all the other chumps out there, I was like, who's this person that Monica's meeting? Is it going to be Reed Richards? Is it going to be like Riri Williams or whatever? And instead it's Major Gooding.
Well, no, and apparently that's not the engineer.
Right. No, I figured that much. But I because so many people were waiting for the engineer.
Yeah. But that's still going to happen, apparently, in the next 2 episodes.
I'm not surprised. But I expected so many people to get up in arms over that.
They would have if not for that song.
Everybody ends up singing Agatha All Along. So
well, what I love is that everyone knew that reveal was coming.
Oh, yeah.
And no one was mad. Like, there was no, like, oh, yeah, we knew that. It was just the delightful sort of, like, no, but they had fun with it, so who cares?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not like they kept it a big secret.
Right. I mean, they couldn't have, and they knew that.
Yeah. And so they laid a lot of little clues along the way. So if you were sort of enough to fuel the idea and speculation... But then when they did the actual, and then when she went over to the house and you were like, oh, okay, this is a house of horrors.
Yeah.
And then whammo, when you see the book in the basement, so on.
I do like that this also opens the door for the name Scarlet Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, look, she's not the only, like, witch around, except she's using Scarlet, and Agatha's using Purple. Like, it just, they're having fun with how we can justify stuff.
Exactly. Yes. No, I like
I'm also not convinced that Agatha's actually the bad guy.
Well, I mean, she's not the bad guy in some of the comics, so...
Well, she rides a line in a lot of the comics.
Yeah.
And I think she's doing the same thing here, because if you look at it, look at some of the ads... A, there's the Nexus drop, which is a major thing for the comics.
Right.
You know, that there's like a Nexus of essentially reality that, you know, is this focal point. There's only one. And it's you know, her and her kids. So, okay. But also, remember the shark yogurt commercial?
Yeah, how could I forget that one?
With the shark going on, how he's eating all the magic and the kid's just starving?
Yes.
That's Wanda and Agatha.
Yes.
And I wonder if it's Agatha's been keeping control over it to try to rein Wanda in.
Maybe, I mean...
And kind of like, this would just get more dangerous, and she's trying to help her.
That would be a reveal. I mean, that's quite possible. My assumption with this was that, yeah, Agatha's the bad guy. Although, who knows? And that she basically showed up after this sort of, like, fantasy X suburb was created and there's now basically sort of leeching. Like she's a parasitic body introduced into like...
See, I think she's what's keeping the hex contained.
That's also quite
possible. She's keeping Wanda a little contained and trying to help her work through all of this. Because she showed up before it got too bad. I don't know. We'll find out. But I love that the show is still going along and just being delightful.
Yes.
I will say I was a little annoyed before the episode aired, and even after people were keeping this up, where everyone's like, oh, look, can't wait for the next episode. They're probably going to do, like, The Office. And I was like, they've only been doing family shows.
Right.
And so afterwards, people are like, oh, look, they're doing Modern Family / The Office. I'm like, just drop it. Like, you, everyone was, why? Why do we have to keep saying The Office?
It's literally Modern Family.
Yeah.
If you see any episode of Modern Family and watch Elizabeth Olsen basically channeling Jules Bowen as
Claire
Dunphy role, and it's so
no, good. Like, I swear to God, like, if Olsen isn't up for awards this season, there's gonna be a riot.
Oh yeah,
like her and Han have to just both get some, like, actual recognition out of this.
I should hope so. Yeah, I mean Olsen and Han both, they managed to play the same character, like, through different conventions each week, and it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, no, it is a showcase.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, like, if it had been like Tatiana Maslany, like, sure, we would have expected it, you know?
Right. Yes.
And there's a version of WandaVision where, like, she got this role because they knew this was coming. And it probably would have been, like, creepier.
Yes.
But I do think that you would have lost that through line of character because she would have disappeared too much.
Yes. I agree.
So, anyway, yeah, so WandaVision. 2 weeks left. There had been a rumor that the last three were all an hour long. So far, that is not true.
I don't think
it'll be true for the last two either, because there's not much left to do, and we know it's a feeder into a movie.
Oh, excuse me. What was I saying? Oh, there's one thing I really, really loved about the most recent episode, because it coincides with this thing that's always on my mind whenever I watch shows like Modern Family or The Office, or, you know, Parks and Rec, is the timeline between the drama and the interview portions. I guess same with any reality show. It's like, on some level, obviously the interview portions take place probably after or maybe before, you know, but from a theoretical, narratological viewpoint, it's actually happening all on the same sort of, like, time stream as we watch it. And WandaVision fucking figured it out.
Yeah.
Like, when Vision is like, what am I doing here? This is absurd. And he leaves the interview, and at the same time, he leaves the van. And it's like, oh, these are all happening at the same time, and that is
right, as if they're just, like, stopping whatever they're doing to, like, talk to this thing,
to absolutely switch realities and setups, like, and they just don't notice it. And I think the other thing about this episode was I think because it's parodying a more recent sitcom style, it's more fun to watch everybody be inescapably bound to the rules of the genre. So they're going along in this, like, tiny little van and treating the circus people like there's actually any stakes there and getting away from them. And, like, when Agatha comes over and says to Wanda, you know, oh, let me get you back, you know, let me sit down. And suddenly Monica is helpless to do anything more at that point.
Right.
Like, there's just rules that they have to try and get around but cannot, which is a delight.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's show is so good. And, like, I almost feel bad for, and I don't really, because I don't think it's, people expect it, but I almost feel bad for Falcon and Winter Soldier, because it's a very different show.
Right.
But, like, you know, are people going to be like, well, this is what we expect. Like, we expect this groundbreaking weirdness. It's like, no, that's not what this is. This is going to be just a straight, like, great action thing, hopefully. And show some range. Like, that's what I really want. I want this all to show weird range in Marvel. Like, we've been getting with the movies recently.
Exactly.
So,
like, with Ragnarok and, you know, good Guardians films and so on.
Someone did point out that, like, there's a good chance that all the shows that have established characters, this and Winter Soldier and Falcon, for example, will probably be one-offs. There are bridges between movies. But the shows that have new characters, Ms. Marvel, you know, a Riri show, She-Hulk and all that, will probably have multiple seasons.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because then their characters will be on their shows and occasionally dip into movies as opposed to shows that act as bridges. And again, that's a fabulous way of doing things.
I agree.
So, yay!
Yeah, way to extend the brand there, people.
Yeah. And I mean, sure, but also, again, it just, it's really well done.
Yes.
Speaking of actually decently well done, how's that? The third and fourth episode of Batgirl?
Which, excuse me, that's Batwoman.
Batwoman, I'm sorry. I was thinking about something with the Supergirl casting for the Flash movie. Which has not, we weren't even going to talk about it, has nothing to do with anything. It just popped into my head.
I hear you.
If we had talked last week about the third episode of Batwoman, I would have been like, yeah, maybe I'm out. But having them both, I hadn't watched it then, watching them both really close, I was like, okay, no, in the fourth episode, like they pick it up, they're finding their show now.
I agree. I just watched the fourth episode this morning before the podcast. You know what? I actually something I really enjoyed in the third episode. I wasn't expecting was their version of Victor Zsasz. At first, I was like, well, you're no Chris Messina, but who the fuck is Chris Messina besides Chris Messina? But I thought, okay, good. Good psycho.
I'll be honest with you. I had a little bit of a problem just because, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're also leading into Black Mask.
Obviously.
And Birds of Prey did such a great job with, frankly, two fairly boring characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Victor Zsasz, okay, he's a serial killer who cuts himself to memorialize his villains. That's fine, I guess. And it's kind of a boring one-off villain, which is how they used him.
Mm-hmm.
And Black Mask is just yet another Gotham mobster in general, and that's fine. But he's, you know, not a great, like, he's whatever. But Birds of Prey found, like, nuance and weirdness in them. And yeah, I feel like exactly. Batwoman is just going to do them straight. And I can just already feel like it's going to be a weird disappointment comparatively.
It is. I mean, it's hard to, yeah. Like I say, it's hard to find sort of more juice than what Birds of Prey managed.
Yeah. But again, I'm happy the show is finding itself.
Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed episode 4.
Yeah.
There are some super clunky moments early in the episode.
Yes.
A comic called Ghost Kid and like pretty on the nose lines about being invisible. I'm like, okay. That's
sure.
But then as it went, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I like the bizarre team up between Alice and Sophie. That was
Alice raiding the fridge. That entire runner straight through to like the only carbs and just sitting there like just tearing hunks off this baguette.
At one point where there's like she's just in the fridge and she like licks a bell pepper and puts it back.
Yeah, and this is the problem, right? Like is she's playing. I mean she isn't. And she's doing her own thing. But in terms of energy, right? This is that Black Mask Ewan McGregor energy that we had.
Right.
And I'm like, just find ways to keep using Alice. Just Jesus. Oh, she's so good in this show.
Yeah, she really is. And I really liked, what's the actor's name? She plays Ryan Wilder. Javisha Leslie. I liked her performance in episode 4 quite a bit. She's figuring out the character as the show figures out the character. And that is... It's much better. So I did not consider that time wasted. That's all.
Right.
I'll say that much.
Yeah. No, it's again, like the first season of Batwoman was clunky and I was hoping they would figure it out by the second season. And then with the sudden, like we have to reboot everything, you know, they took a step back, but it is finding itself now. And I think it's going to become like a much better show.
I agree. Yeah.
So, hooray.
Hooray. Hooray for Batwoman.
Also, I've only watched the first episode. I don't think you've seen any of them of this season of Black Lightning.
No, I have. Well, I mean, I've seen not from this season.
Right. I meant this season. Yeah.
So how is the season of Black Lightning?
So far, the first episode is just they've gone darker.
Oh.
And like in a good way of just after the after this whole war and everything else, just everyone is. It takes place like a year later.
Oh, interesting.
And just everything is falling apart.
So things aren't vertical, is what you're saying.
They are not. Yep. But yeah, no, the show is creatively like at its peak, and it's sort of sad to see them, you know, knowing that they're going to end it here. But also, it's already starting to kind of feel like it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
Just from where the characters are, you're just like, yeah, no, they're done. You know.
Interesting.
So.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I also want to see the spin-off as well.
The painkiller thing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious about that.
And, of course, this coming week we get the first Superman and Lois episode, and then the week after that we get The Flash, so...
That's right.
Everything is rolling forward.
Yeah, I guess I'll watch Superman and Lois just out of curiosity, but I'm not, like, over the moon about it.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, that's cool, but I... You know.
I like... They're actors for Clark and Lois so much, though.
Oh, I know. They're like, that's the thing. That's the reason I'm watching. Because Tyler Hoechlin and someone, Tulloch, can't remember her first
Elizabeth.
Name. Elizabeth Tulloch, yeah. They're really good.
Yeah.
It's funny, we're watching Palm Springs, and it's got, what's-her-face from Riverdale, and it's got Tyler Hoechlin as the bride and groom. And... It's just so funny seeing Tyler Hoechlin and Camila Mendes in like outside of the CW universe.
Right. So yeah, you finally saw Palm Springs.
Yes, I did. I really liked Palm Springs.
Yeah, was it not fucking delightful?
It was indeed. And like there's the moment when you realize, I think it's during the after the wedding speech, when he gives that sort of impromptu speech and then sort of does the, like, starts dancing with the crowd, I'm like, oh, he's in the time loop and he's been in this loop for, like, Christ knows how long.
Right.
And he's just screwing with everybody now because it's all he's got left to do. And I was like, okay, this is a great start.
It was a great use of the time loop. Just, it went in places that most things that do time loops don't go.
Exactly, yeah.
So.
And I actually watched it twice. Once by myself and then again with Alan. And I realized that the first time I watched it, I didn't actually fully understand how they left the loop. But this second time, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Because they just yeet themselves into like a whole different, basically, universe and leave the loop time loop universe behind. Cause,
right.
Yeah. Oh, and which also saves Roy.
Roy.
Also gets him out of the loop as well, which was great.
Yeah, it was just one of those things of like that movie kept surprising me with its depth.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's sort of grappled with some ideas about like what happens if you are stuck in that situation about, you know, what's meaningful and why, without ever being sort of overbearing or pretentious about it, which I really enjoyed.
Yes. Also, I ended up watching a show that I'm pretty sure you have not seen.
Just try me.
Mythic Quest.
Oh, no, I have not seen that. Is that the one with Rob McElhenney?
Yes.
Yes.
And him and Charlie Day and Megan Gantz.
Right. Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Well, those two aren't in it, but they're the creators.
Oh, okay.
It is delightful. It is strange as hell. Like, you know, it's a sitcom, I guess, that is set in essentially, like, a game company, right?
Mm-hmm.
That are creating an online MMO. and all of the insanity that occurs. And they just up everything to 11, kind of like Sonny does. And just let these insane characters run wild.
Okay.
And it works. Like, that's the thing. It's like, it has Danny Pudi in an amazingly good role for him.
Oh, wow. I did not know this.
Yeah, he plays the money guy. And he is just a stone-cold sociopath. It's stunning. But yeah, no, it's actually a lot more fun than I thought it would be, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 10 episodes, technically, because there's 9 episodes in the season, and then they did a special pandemic episode.
Oh.
And what's fascinating about it is, like, there have been a number of shows that have done, you know, like the 30 Rock thing or Parks and Rec, right? But this does it as part of the show, and it works better than any other pandemic episode I've seen because it's a workplace, like, comedy drama thing. And so the pandemic episode is just them dealing and trying to, like, you know, and how they're having trouble even just working remotely and adjusting and all of that. So it works very well.
Huh.
Mm. It is a delightful show, and I think you should try it. It's not Ted Lasso, which is, like, the best thing Apple TV has ever bothered to do.
Right.
But it is a strong contender for just a good, solid sitcom.
Well, speaking of Apple TV, or at least, I don't know what I'm talking about, I believe, is it Disney that has the Muppet Show? Like, the original
yes.
Muppet Show now? Only 5 seasons. I am sort of... that feels weird to me, because that show seemed to be on for every single year of my childhood.
There were a lot of episodes per season, though.
There must have been.
Also, do keep in mind that the Disney Plus stuff removes a couple of episodes.
Oh.
What's funny is that, like, they decided to not cut up the episodes when they had mm-hmm. a problem. They had to just remove the entire episode, and it was all rights-based. You know, like, the Brooke Shields episode isn't there because the end bit is an Alice in Wonderland tea episode, which is hysterical, but it ends with them all singing "We're Off to See the Wizard."
Right.
And they could not get the clearance, so they just pulled the episode. So there are a couple episodes that aren't there. They do have the extra UK footage, if you've never seen it.
Don't know.
Yeah, like these were on the DVDs that were released years ago. Was that, like, there was, like Farscape, for instance, like, there was stuff that was cut from the American broadcast that wasn't cut from the UK.
Huh.
Like, a little skit here and there. So where they can, they add those back in.
I wonder if, like, sometimes Canadian broadcasts are the same as the American, sometimes they're the same as British ones.
Right.
So I'll have to look into this.
But yeah, no, Muppet Show is up on Disney Plus, and is good.
Nice to know. Although I really like the Brooke Shields episode. That's a shame.
Yeah.
They didn't do the tea party bit. Oh well. Yeah, there's that whole sequence where she's falling down the rabbit hole.
Right.
And yeah, and she's like, curiouser and curiouser is the expression.
Yeah, and then they do the whole tea party, and it's fantastic.
Ah, well.
But of course they do have the Christopher Reeve episode and the Mark Hamill, because of course they do.
Awesome.
I mean, they it was not hard for them to clear the rights to Star Wars, you know? Let's just put it that way. Also, with the Chris Reeve episode, they only really had to clear the rights for a Superman joke, I think. Which, again, not hard. Well, I guess it might have been hard. But they were allowed to. And, of course, Hamlet. So, hey.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna be binging me some... some Muppet Show. Actually, now that I think about it, in Canada, we did watch the British cut.
Okay.
Because the little sort of station identifier at the end was always ITM Broadcasting, which I think is British. So there you go.
So I also understand that you watched a movie based on a Faith No More song. Is that what that was?
That's exactly what. I wanted it all, but I couldn't have it. It was in my face, but I couldn't grab it. Anywho, yeah, no, it is I Care a Lot, directed by Jay Blakely and written by the same, who's done a couple of films, one really good film called, I think, Disappearance of Alice Krieg, and then some sort of work for hire stuff, which is undistinguished. But it stars Rosamund Pike as a professional guardian. But it's a grift. What she does is that she targets elderly people who are maybe showing early signs of ill health or dementia, but are still okay. But you know, maybe in some years will need care. And then she basically, you know, with the aid of a doctor, with a corrupt doctor and a gullible judge, essentially gets them into a care home and then drains all their money from them.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so we're not, this is not a character that you're meant to just uncomplicatedly root for.
Right. Like,
she's a bad guy. And then one day she finds this too good to be true elderly woman played by Diane Weiss, named Jennifer Peterson, and the doctor says this person is like, you know, they're everything you want. They've got no living family. And so you can basically, and they've got enough money that you can drain them for years.
Okay.
More or less. And then they discover, like, while they're doing all this, they're selling the house. And then a shifty looking guy pulls up in a taxi cab. He's like, is Ms. Peterson here? And they're like, no, she's not living here anymore. And the guy just takes off and then goes to his next stop is like, he comes to Peter Dinklage, who's got like a man bun and this like long goatee. And it's clear that Peter Dinklage is just a criminal. He's like, he's a Russian mafia guy. And Jennifer Peterson is not who they think she is. And then it becomes this essential battle of wills in which Pike's character, you know, where Peterson's character begins to like apply, or not Peterson, Dinklage's character begins to apply all pressure, first legal and then non-legal. But Pike's character keeps doubling down and it becomes this like basic battle of wills.
Gotcha.
And that stuff is actually, it's really funny. It's like, it really, really, it sparkles, as they say. Chris Messina plays a sleazy lawyer. He's really good. But then the third act, it sort of turns into more of a conventional like heist and revenge film.
Okay.
And then it means that you have to suddenly stop like dealing with a film with two anti-heroes, and suddenly Pike's character has to be kind of a hero. And it's like, no, you forgot your own premise.
Right.
But even so, despite that, it's a nasty bit of fun, and it's very deftly directed.
Nice.
And it's not a waste of 90 minutes, I'll put it that way.
That's always good to hear.
Yeah. It's not going to, it's got flaws.
Sure.
Mostly to deal with that. It's also got Isa Gonzalez as Pike's girlfriend.
Okay.
And she's really good. So
nice. Yeah.
It was better than Clarice.
Oh yeah, how was Clarice? I mean, I'm guessing not great from the sound of that, but
there's been two episodes. I've only watched one. I don't know. Maybe it'll be good at some point, but not if it does what this is doing. It seems like they're just turning it into like a case of the week piece, and I can't see why, like, what the point of, aside from the IP and people knowing Silence of the Lambs, there's really no reason for this character to be Clarice Starling.
Gotcha.
So it's just a run-of-the-mill CBS procedural, as far as I can tell.
Well, along those lines, you've also seen the new Equalizer.
Right, so if you want to ask me, hey Aiden, what does a good CBS procedural look like? It looks like the new Equalizer.
Nice.
Yeah, so I watched the first two episodes, and it just, I don't know, for me, it just works. The episodes are, like, nicely, tightly written. They balance, you know, the main character's personal life with the mystery of the week really well. It updates the world of the Equalizer for 2020s. In part by having Queen Latifah as the main character. So you've got a middle-aged black woman who, instead of Edward Woodward as this, you know, middle-aged white guy, right, as the original Equalizer, or even Denzel Washington in the movies. It just, for those of you who know the original show, it gives you just enough to, like, just enough nostalgia to find it enjoyable.
Okay.
But it seems much more interested in the fact of McCall, that's Queen Latifah's sort of identity as a black woman and her daughter as a young black girl, sort of in modern day America. I mean, and it goes out of its way to talk about these things, which is really fascinating.
Nice. So it's kind of the anti-Walker.
Kinda, yes. And the supporting cast, I get a huge kick out of it. In the original Equalizer, you know, McCall had all kinds of friends, like one guy who gives him information. There's an Asian woman club owner who helps out, and they've got all these same people, but they're a lot more interesting in this. Here is a flex. Chris Noth plays the I'm the guy with information.
Nice.
Like, 5 years ago, this show would have had Chris Noth as the main character.
Yeah.
But now having him as, like, a recurring sidekick character, I'm like, holy shit, this is a thing.
Right. That is kind of great.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Also, the club owner is now played by Liza Lapira, who's been, you recognize her. She played the obsessive crazy neighbor from Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Right.
She was also in Dollhouse as Topher's colleague Ivy, and she's really good. And her husband, who's also like the tech wizard who can hack into anything, dude, is Adam Goldberg, which is
a nice choice.
It's a good choice, and their marital bickering is really funny. So they've got these nice sort of, like, really fun characters that they play with. I guess, and it occurred to me at one point, I thought, if you took Person of Interest and you removed the whole machine stuff, because
right,
that's its own thing, and you actually gave Taraji Henson the lead role instead of Jim Caviezel, you'd get something like The Equalizer.
Mm. Okay.
So like, similar case of the week stuff, you know, helping out helpless people, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, good. I'm in. I'm this is into my regular weekly rotation, because you need a room for a CBS procedural in your life.
Sometimes.
One every so often.
I have paused, by the way, my Supernatural rewatch.
Oh, how long?
I don't know. It just, I reached the end of season 9 and watched, and I forgot that, like, the first time they did a, like, look at how awesome and how long our show has run and here's why. Like, they did one after the last episode, right? They also did one before season 10.
Oh.
When they were like, good Lord, we've made it this far, because they were coming up on 200 episodes.
Oh, right.
And I was like, you know what? This is a good place to break, because if I keep watching it, like, I'm going to get to the, I've seen this stuff too recently.
I was thinking that, yeah.
So I'm going to take a little bit of a break at least. Maybe, you know, like, stretch out the seasons. I just, yeah, finding other stuff to rewatch. And part of my problem is that because my brain is weak and I am easily, easily swayed, I have a friend on Twitter who is watching Magicians for the first time.
Ooh.
And, like, keeps tweeting about it every time they watch an episode. I have another friend on Twitter who is watching Halt and Catch Fire for the first time.
Ooh.
And is tweeting about it every time they watch a new episode. I have a third friend who is watching Person of Interest for the first time.
Jeez.
and a fourth friend who was watching The Shield for the first time. And I'm like, okay, guys, y'all need to stop watching like my favorite shows before I want to rewatch them all and burn out on them.
That's awesome.
What's amazing to me, though, is like the Magician's thing. It's like, you know, person just doing like one tweet per episode. It's like, fine.
Yeah.
You know, person of interest, not tweeting that much about it. It's okay. The Halt and Catch Fire person, up until season four, it was weird. They were just like, I don't like any of these characters. You know, they're all sometimes like the asshole. There's no like good character. I'm like, do you not know people? Like, have you met human beings? Because that's how that works. And by season four, has fallen in love with all of them. And I was get it, but also I don't know why it took four seasons, but okay.
Well, there's somebody I follow on Twitter who's watching Halt and Catch Fire. I don't know. It might be a rewatch. It's Tim Callahan, and he keeps on posting images. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's Tim.
No, it's Tim, yeah.
Who's never seen it and was kind of like against the show for a while.
Oh, man.
Like, you could find, and I was just like, weird. I liked him a lot. You know, I've had drinks with the man. He's a good guy. I don't know.
He's just got insane opinions that make no sense.
You know, everyone's allowed that. But my favorite is the person who's rewatching S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, all these other people will mention the show's name when they're talking about it, generally, mm-hmm. or, like, have, like, an ongoing thread that they post to, so you always kind of have some reference to, oh, they mean this. The person who's watching The Shield for the first time is not doing that. And it's just, like, every now and then there's just, like, sometimes it's just, like, two words, sometimes it's, like, you know, a sentence or two about some random episode, but I can almost always tell exactly where they are.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You know, just from... I mean, obviously, you know, things like, well, Forrest Whitaker's in this. Sure. Right. That's an easy tell. But just the, you know, like, oh, God, like, you know, Shane's this horrible fucking, like, and just little teeny drops. I'm like, oh, I remember that. You know, it's just.
I have to rewatch S.H.I.E.L.D. It's been a long time.
So. I know. I want to as well. And I still kind of want to get the Blu-rays because I want to see that. I mean, it took 7 years.
Right.
Just about to actually remaster it. I'm curious. But also, God, that show is such a heavy lift emotionally.
I know. That's the thing.
I'm just like, I don't know if I can do it. I will eventually, but I don't know if I can do it right now. Because, that show just fucks you up.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the thing. That's kind of why I've resisted. I'm like, right. I can't take this right now.
I'm like, it's not a pandemic watch. It just really isn't.
Exactly.
I don't need reminders that humanity is awful.
Oh, speaking of Pandemic Watch, I watched an entire Netflix limited series that you probably haven't watched.
Okay.
Behind Her Eyes.
I have not.
It is, I thought I would like some trashy, dumb thriller to watch.
Sure.
And everybody, and there's a discourse, capital D discourse, around the ending. Sort of basically saying, you know, people say the ending ruins the whole thing, or the twist ruins everything. And I watched it, and I'm like, first off, there's really not much to ruin. it's like, dude, I can't imagine that you would ever get invested enough in any of these characters to actually think that anything that happens to them matters on any level. Also, the twist, I'm not sure what they meant by the twist, because the thing that I think they think is a twist isn't. Like, if you pay attention, you can sort of see it coming from quite a ways away. So I don't know what to say about this, essentially.
Gotcha.
It's like the twist that isn't. I think one of the things that makes it, and I'm going to spoil Behind Her Eyes, is that the bad guy essentially wins in the end. Maybe that's the twist. But the other twist is that, okay, I'll just give you the setup. A woman named Louise goes out for a drink to meet a friend. Instead runs into this handsome dude. They sort of hit it off. He kisses her and then says, oh, I'm sorry. I can't do this. Forgive me. And scuttles off into the night. The next day she goes to work and lo and behold, it's her new boss. And he's married. So, and then so she says, you know, we can't carry on or anything, but please don't fire me. He says, okay. And then she runs into the wife, and they go out for coffee. And the wife says, you know, let's, you know, I'm enjoying hanging out with you, but please don't tell my husband. I need a friend who's just mine. But it's clear there's something wrong with her. Like, gotcha. she takes psych meds, and he phones her in the afternoon on the home phone every day to make sure she's actually there.
Huh.
And so on. And I think we're meant to wonder whether he's a bad guy or not, but he's just, he's so troubled all the time that he's clearly not a bad guy. And right. She's obviously the bad guy, although we're meant to sort of wonder, you know. At any rate, so it goes on and on, and then the Louise and the doctor end up in an affair. But there's this shot, I think it's maybe in the beginning of the third episode, when she lets the doctor into her, he's a psychiatrist, she lets the doctor into her apartment. And the shot is sort of like hovering above them.
Mm.
And the sound is muted. I'm like, oh, okay, the wife is astrally projecting and watching and she knows everything. And I'm like, lo and behold. And then there's a lot of flashbacks to this point where they, the wife is in a mental hospital, albeit a kind of a posh one, and she's befriended this young gay man named Rob. And you know that Rob knows this technique for lucid dreaming. And I'm like, oh shit, the wife is Rob. Like, he's taken her body. And,
gotcha.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's happened. And I'm like, is this supposed to be a twist? Because they're not hiding this at all. People. Anyway. I mean, it was a bit of fun.
Sure.
But, I mean, man. And it was compulsively watchable. I will give it that. Like,
that's
I
good,
watched the whole damn thing. Even knowing what was happening and what was
right.
coming. And an ending that was, like, so logically implausible, and as you put it with a Doctor Who episode, aggressively stupid and aggressively nonsensical, that I was like,
yeah,
why
well we're hitting the hour mark.
We
could stop at aggressively stupid.
where is there to go after that?
I you know, I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know, it's god. You know, next week we'll have other stuff. You need to catch up on Riverdale. Like, we could talk about Riverdale, and I want to talk about Riverdale, but you need to see the second episode at least, and I know you haven't. And I say second episode, I'm treating the time jump as like that, because it was supposed to be the start of the season.
Right.
But I will say that the thing that's still making me laugh, that the way we both managed to describe it in email still holds true. It's like Riverdale, but dumber. I will give you one spoiler for the second episode. They reveal Veronica's husband and her last name, because she took his last name.
Ooh.
And I'm sure that she'll start going by Lodge again eventually, but now keep in mind, right? Like, what you know about her so far is that, like, in the interim, she was, like, working on Wall Street for a while and then retired because she was making her husband jealous, right?
Right.
And she refers to herself, God help us all, as the She-Wolf of Wall Street.
Yep.
Okay, do you want to take a guess as to what the husband's last name is?
Is it Wolf?
No.
Okay.
That would actually probably be better. It's Gecko. And at first I was like, that is so painful. And then I realized that the age group of people who Riverdale's aimed at would not get the reference. That they can get away with it because no one's looking for it.
Wow, that's quite a thing.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Riverdale,
my
but dumber.
Oh, my poor head. Why? No. I have to watch it just so I can exercise that bit of knowledge. Yeah, it was like the first episode of The Time Jump when they're basically redoing the opening of Silence of the Lambs, the, like, sort of the running.
Oh, yeah, no, the whole Betty FBI agent thing, it just.
That is, I mean, it's all hilarious. None of,
yeah, like, no, the second episode, though, turns it up. Like, it turns it up from, look at all these changes and all this stuff, to, like, a whole new level of, this literally makes no sense.
Yeah.
It is stunning.
Yeah, I've made a joke that it's like a 14-year-old wrote this stuff, but it's more specific than that. It's like a 14-year-old, but a 14-year-old living in, like, 1994 or 95 has made all this stuff, and all this 14-year-old kid knows is other movies and TV shows, but no idea how the real world works in any way.
Oh, there are, in the second episode, there are two references to Secession, comparing what's going on to scenes in Secession.
Oh, shit.
Like, directly. And I was just like, you can't do that! It's not charming. It's just making people go, maybe this other show did it better? I don't know. Oh, it was a mess. Anyway.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Let's play some music.
Jeez, yes, okay.
Woo!